Blog Talk Radio.
Ta-da! It's Rebooting the News, not Blog Talk Radio, and here's Jay Rosen. Jay?
Hi, Dave.
Hi, Jay. How are we doing?
We're doing great. We're scheduled to have a guest today, but he's not here yet, so
yeah. We'll
start the show on our own, right?
Oh, we can do that. You know, we've done it. This is number 30, by the way.
Is it?
Yep, we've done 30 of these things. If they were years, we would be already, old.
The franchise keeps building.
I know. It's kind of nice, isn't it? It's like
you're going to be in Los Angeles this week, right?
Just for one day, tomorrow. You
Tell
know.
Us about it.
Well, I'm going to speak at Jeff Pulver's 140 Characters Conference, which is a Twitter conference, oddly enough, and I always thought it was kind of strange that there is such a thing. The last few ones, people say, were great. So,
I was at the New York one, yeah.
Oh, you were? Oh.
Yes.
Cool. And, well, you know what? Jeff is here. Should I, like, sign him in?
Yeah.
Okay. Welcome, Jeff.
Hey there. Sorry, I didn't see the 11:20, and I thought it was 11:30.
Oh, well, there you go.
So this is Jeff Jarvis, our friend from BuzzMachine.com and a professor of journalism at CUNY and somebody completely immersed in the Rebooting the News conversation, and we thought he would be a great guest on our show.
And I'm honored to be here.
Oh, well, we're honored to have you, Jeff.
Jeff, we were just talking about Dave's appearance at the 140 Characters Conference in L.A.
You were right, David, your tweet, when you tweeted the good list of people who were going there. It's kind of your philosophy. The people who should be there are there, and it looks like a good bunch.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so.
Did you go to the one in New York, Jeff?
No, I couldn't.
No? Well, Jay, you were going to start to say, what was it like? What was the one in New York like?
It was pretty cool. It was a lot of different sorts of people who have all invested in Twitter and a lot of short presentations by pretty smart people about kind of how they see it. So I thought it was worthwhile, and I think you'll probably have a lot of fun there. But you're saying you're a little confused about what to say?
Well, it's to the entertainment industry, and I don't talk to the entertainment. I mean, that's the theory, at least, that's why he wanted to do it in L.A. And, of course, entertainment and Twitter, you know, sort of, you know, maybe we got dragged into this without, like, nobody really asked me if we could, like, turn this into the entertainment industry.
Yeah, I presume that it's not.
What?
I presume that it's not. The whole world is entertainment now. We're all Hollywood, or we're all not. You know,
I so totally don't go for that.
I'm being facetious. I'm just saying that there is no more Hollywood anymore.
Well, I hope you're right, and you know, but I fear that it's going the wrong way. That like I went on a tour this week of San Quentin with a bunch of bloggers, and it was a really
your blog.
heavy experience. But I just wanted them to turn the goddamn cameras off and just like let's be here, you know. I don't want to be Mike Wallace. I don't want to be some great, you know, interviewer asking momentous questions. I want to be a listener, you know, and to be a listener and be on camera at the same time, you know, it's like crazy. You know, we're not Mike Wallace or even Morley Safer, you know.
Well, when you said you were going to be at this conference and you asked your Twitter stream what you should say, I thought a title for your remarks could be After Twitter.
No, we'll actually have a title for...
So what is your title?
How I Learned to Stop... oh, geez. You see,
how I Learned to Love the Fail Whale.
Yeah, but there's an extra little word in there. It's from, you know, it's Dr. Strangelove. And, you know, it's sort of, it's cute. And I thought it was exactly the way I want to, that's what I'll talk about. You know, it's sort of like, it's not bad news that we get to fail Will, because what it's doing is reminding us that there's life after Twitter. We'll have to solve this problem ourselves. They're not going to solve it for us.
Dave, what did you think? I was dying, you know, I hate it when people tell me to write something that I don't want to feel like writing about. But so I'll do it right now. I'm dying to know what you think about the Google and Bing deals with Twitter.
Yeah, well, that was actually number one on our list, and we should all talk about it. You wrote a book called, you know, What Would Google Do? And I think that, you know, my take on it was that now very much Google and Microsoft, and maybe to a lesser extent Twitter, are in the news business. You know, from a strategic standpoint in a tech business, Twitter may have just gotten embraced and extended by these two guys. We're not privileged to see what the actual agreement is, so we don't know what the terms are. But in order for it to be sort of on parity, well, Twitter would have to get back from them not just money or whatever sort of payment they're getting for this for the stream. They would also have to get back rights to whatever streams, real-time streams, Google and Microsoft are able to create on their own, which are no doubt going to be huge when they finally get around to figuring out how to do it, you know, because both of them have enormous reach and enormous financial resources, and like it or not, they can keep systems up much better than Twitter can. And so when it comes time, does Twitter actually get it back, and will Twitter be in a position to actually use those streams? You know, my guess is that both Google and Microsoft will now take over the search business. Whatever business there is to be had searching the tweet stream, which I wonder about that because I just, you know, 140 characters isn't that much, right? This is one of my concerns. But they're all in the news business now, and, you know, and I think that the door is finally starting to close for, you know, the icons of the news industry. You know, they should have already been in position to compete with Twitter, in my opinion. You know, they shouldn't be so glad to be on Twitter. They should be thinking about how to compete with it. You know, but I don't see any evidence that they are.
When you say they're in the news business now because mm-hmm. of these deals, what do you mean exactly?
Well, because the news business is new. It's different. It's changed. You know, the news business is about, we've talked about this a lot, right, Jay? I mean, you know, mm-hmm. that, evolve, imagine the evolution of Twitter to really support news. You know, ask somebody in the newsroom, you know, they're, are guys from the Times now that have been on Twitter for, you know, a year or more, ask them, well, what would a, you know, news-oriented Twitter look like? That's, they probably have ideas about that. And this whole thing about, you know, real-time delivery of information, that's, isn't that what news is?
Mm. Yeah.
Well, and,
well, I always thought it was.
Reuters and, Tinker, you know Tinker.com?
No.
No.
Started by Glam. And what they've had the fire hose from Twitter, and they do what Daylife does in the sense that they try to cluster it and find the topics. I think part of what it is an emergent system of discovering what news is happening, what people are talking about before the news happens.
Mm-hmm.
And Samir Arora, who's the CEO of Glam, told me that they did a deal with Reuters where they just traded hoses, so that for Reuters, Twitter
who
becomes
did the deal? Who traded hoses?
Tinker did with Reuters. So Tinker has the hose from Twitter, and it tries to suss out what's the news and what people are talking about and where are the news stories.
Right.
And Reuters sees value in that. Reuters has been clever about this with Twitter for a long time now in seeing what's the news they don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's not the problem
now,
with
so when Reuters does this, is it algorithmic or is it with human beings?
I think at first it's human beings, but I think the long term is algorithmic. After the Chinese earthquake in Sichuan was on Twitter, what, a year and a half ago?
I don't think so, Jeff. I really think it's going to be human.
I think it's both. I think what happens is what you have to do is you have to see emergent words, emergent topics, and say something's going on here.
Right.
And it alerts you to some. It alerts the human to it.
Yeah, that's what I see happening is algorithmic tools that enable news providers to see what is not just hot, but what is new and also what is of an interest, then you take that information and you produce into the stream high-quality editorial work that is more responsive to what is live now. That's the potential that
I think you're right, Jay. I think you have a few layers. One layer is, the world is talking about the story we didn't know was happening. Uh-oh, we better do something.
Right.
Another layer is, here's what people are talking about in the story we're doing. Another layer is, here's what interests them and here's what doesn't interest them.
Right.
The intriguing layer to me is, here's what they're talking about that we haven't done a story about.
Here's another layer.
We should do a story about.
Another layer I want to see, Jeff.
I know what you're going to say, Jay.
Is, here are the stories that people need explained for them.
Yes.
Right, and the explanations.
Twitter
and the
as assignment desk.
Yeah.
big pool of money thing, right?
Yeah, right. That's what I want to see is how to know what people need explained for them based on what they're trying to do with the web in searching those stories and reacting to them.
Right.
Well, let's you guys have just defined the new news system.
Well, it is a new news system, yeah.
That is the new news system. I don't think there's another one.
Well, it's what your student Cody Brown said, Jay. It's the people are going to share what they share. The question I ask my students all the time is, how do you add journalism and add value then to the conversation?
Right.
And
you can't do
about something, they don't know something. The only way you're going to do it is by listening to what they're saying.
Right. And you can't do that without good tools to tell you what people are doing.
Well, I think journalism students and then journalism, if they ever get to be professionals, are discussion leaders. Like the BloggerCon discussion leader.
Like BloggerCon, yeah. Yeah.
They're
only good at it if they add value.
Pardon me?
They're only good at it if they add value, if they add perspective or knowledge.
But
or
their
they,
value,
or
they, let's pin this down, okay, because I thought Cody Brown's piece was great. But the value that they add is a reflection. It's a mirror. It just basically, it might do some, a little distortion to concentrate and a summarize or whatever, but all it's doing is showing you back what it found.
It may do some, but then it may take action. Then it may fill in a blank, right? You recognize
how could it fill in a blank,
something.
Jeff, I don't get it. Where did
you
it
go
get...
report? Gee,
what?
Everybody wants to know something. The reporter picks up the phone, finds out the answer, comes back, and reports
okay.
it back to
the
group.
Then that's
I found out the fact for you.
Okay, that's
that reflects back the need of the community. You're quite right, or the confusion of the community. But it's more
but
than just perspective.
But he didn't invent the fact, right? The fact came from somewhere else.
Oh yeah, No. They're a transmitter.
Right.
They're a connector.
Mm. Jeff, when you heard the news about Microsoft, Bing, Google, and the Twitter firehose, what sense did you make? What did you think about?
Well, I'll find out now whether I did it right or not, but I asked myself, what would Dave do? Because my thought process here was, well, it's not theirs to sell. It's ours.
Well,
and,
no, it is theirs to
well,
sell.
That's the problem. Which is the problem.
Yes, we sold ourselves out to them so cheap. I mean, it's, this goes to another story that that Jay picked up on that I hadn't seen and really sort of raised my blood pressure a little bit, how Twitter, gets its best ideas from its users, and isn't this wonderful, right?
Yeah, the Times today, right.
Yeah, and Jay comes back and, takes the angle, well, why is it that it's okay here but not okay in news? But I keep wanting to know, when am I going to get paid? Nobody ever asked me if I wanted to work for free. I don't want to work for free. I like getting paid. And, I do really, I'm not just talking about me. I'm talking about all of us, right?
Yeah.
There's this dividing line between these guys get paid and these guys don't. That's another reason, by the way, why there are going to be a billion different Twitters. That problem, that structural thing that they set up there that says that if you're on our side of the line, you get paid, and if you're on the other side, which is almost everybody else, you don't.
Well, Dave, it also depends on what currency you get paid with. When I'm on Twitter, and I think Jay would probably agree with this too, what I get paid with, first off, is attention. I also get paid with information,
yes.
but stay with the attention for a second.
Yeah.
And so that's why when it first seemed they only did a deal with Bing, I said, whoa, I want to be discovered through
right.
Google.
Yeah.
And who is it for them to say where I can be discovered and where I can't be? If it were just in the cloud, as Dave Weiner's been saying, then it's up to the merit as to whether or not every search engine in the world and every other mechanism in the world would use it. And we're going past, I think, a world of pages and search, and Google knows this well. Marissa Meyer's been talking about this, to the idea of a news stream. It's Dave Weiner on the river. If you go past this notion of the destination to the constant stream and insinuating yourself in that and adding value to that, then that's where Twitter's architectural importance is, and that's why I think you're right, Dave, and it took me a while to see it, but how important it is for it to be open in the cloud.
Yeah, we're on that path where basically that message is going to get delivered to every user at their whatever time. It's such a well-worn path in technology that it doesn't take any great insight to see. It just takes experience. I mean, just
so is that the cause you talk about at the 140 conference, is how do you open this thing up? How do you...
Well, yeah, and you know that they want to do it too. I mean, because Ashton Kutcher doesn't want to be one of the guys who works for free. You got to know that, right? I mean, you know, he unfortunately for him is on the wrong side of the line as far as Twitter is concerned. And, you know, I want the attention. It's true. The attention has value. But over on their side of the line, they get the attention and they get paid. And that's usually the way it works. You know, the guys on the New York Yankees, they get to play baseball, which is fun, and they make like $100 million each of them, you know? So the only way that it really works is if you're getting paid and you're having fun. You got to have both. And, you know, it's that's the thing that's going to drive.
Well, I don't quite understand what you're saying, Dave. I mean, I do in the sense, mm-hmm. I do and I don't. I do in this sense that in the Wikipedia model, lots of people are contributing, but it's not a company, and nobody's going to sell it, and so people don't mind contributing because they're contributing to a public good. But,
let me clarify. Okay, I understand. If I'm going to work for free, then I want to work in a world where everyone's working for free.
Okay.
That's okay with me, too. I don't have a problem with that.
Okay.
What I don't like is the situation where by some arbitrary decision, you know, some guy, you know, like, there are employees at Twitter who have 2 million followers, Jay. You know, what did they do other than get a job? I mean, you know, does that make any sense to you?
Well, that's the whole suggested users thing. But in Times article, the Times article was about how Twitter had drawn certain innovations from users and then incorporated that into the system. So, like, the retweet system, which became a convention, becomes a feature.
Right.
And
they didn't say the word once in that. There's a platform, and when you open it up, people surprise you by building value on top of it, which is how newspapers should think of themselves, and they don't realize that.
Right.
But look at how long it took for that to happen, and that's the evidence that this is too centralized. In other words, the users...
It did take a while,
Well, it still hasn't happened in newspapers. Century.
What hasn't happened in newspapers?
The idea that people can have an impact on what the thing is.
That's right.
And add value to it, and you're open to that. That's the lesson for today's story, that it's right under their noses next door to me.
Well,
right,
that's...
But hasn't it happened? I mean, it has happened. It just hasn't happened in the context of the institutions that, you know, you identify as being the news, right?
Right.
But when we wake up one day and realize that we're getting 90% of our news not through those institutions, then we'll have seen that it's been going on all along, you know?
Well, this is the way for them to play along, is to add value to that stream. That's how you add journalism into the stream now.
Let me ask both of you guys a question, okay? So I can have both of you guys here. Do you think maybe don't take this the wrong way, but do you think maybe you've been...
That's a dangerous start, Dave.
Yeah, I know. It's a bad way to start, isn't it? But I hate it when people do that, because you know that they're going to take it the wrong way. Do you think maybe you've been spending too much time trying to convince these people that they need to get into the... jump out of the boat and get in the water with the rest of us?
Yes.
Okay.
Dave, or Jay, you?
I go forward on two tracks, and it's worked for me. I go forward with the people who I think are inventing the new, like YouTube, but many others, and I try and speak to those who have transcended the news industry's assumptions. And then I also try and engage the people who are still in that institution and argue with them, wrestle with them. And I think it's important for me, at least, for what I do, to do both.
Well, it is, and you add value there. The difference between the two of us, I think, Jay, is that you've always done it from the academy, and that gives you the advantage of being the outsider. I have what I thought was the advantage of being an insider, that I could get more change done, and I fooled myself for a long time.
Right. Yeah. See, I've never been inside the industry, and I've never placed my chips there or had the emotional investment in it, but I've always talked to it.
When I complain about it, when we both complain about it, we both get in trouble for, you know, being dystopian, when we're utopian, I think, or trying to tear things down, when all we're doing is saying this is happening anyway. And so it our relationships with the industry, Dave, I think do bring limitations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's true.
You know, we're all doing that anyway. I mean, I spent an hour on the phone with Jennifer Preston last week, right? So I can't say that I have given up. You know, I like working with certain news people. And
I think we should. I think it's the right thing to do, but all the eggs can't be in that basket. And the problem is there's danger, Will Robinson, here in a few places. You know, go back to the Twitter deal.
Right.
Part of the problem immediately is that news organizations, Murdoch's going to now turn around and say, well, you pay Twitter for your content, which of course isn't their content.
Right.
Why don't you pay us for our news content when, in fact, they still don't realize
Well, because
Google
he hasn't managed
value.
To make it exclusive. That's the magic of what Twitter did. Twitter withheld this for so long, you know, and just hyped up the value of it. Who knows if it has any value? I mean, I don't see a whole lot of really great revelations that come to me via Twitter. I don't know about you guys, but I don't know what Microsoft paid for it either. I mean,
I don't know if they did pay. That's still the thing that I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know what the terms are.
You know, by the way, here's another interesting observation, I think, is that we got really orchestrated there that day, didn't we? That wasn't real-time news. That was orchestrated news. You know, first somebody hits the drum, one drum, and says, Microsoft, Twitter, right? And then we all go, what about Google? This isn't cool. What's Google? And then 3 hours later, Google.
Right.
Actually, Yahoo announced that they had something, too.
Did they? Because I heard that Carol Bartz had the flu and didn't make it. I mean, I don't know if that flu came on her really quickly.
I don't know if there is huge commercial value in it either, Dave, but what I do see is that the web is leaving behind the concept of the site, and it's moving to the stream.
Yes.
And
this is what they're doing. Isn't it? That's
the web
scary.
is detaching itself from website, and it's becoming stream. And so it's not so much that they know that there's gold in those hills.
Yeah.
It's that they know the web is going there, and they have to be with it.
Well, you see, now this is the problem that I'm grappling with in terms of architecture, right? If that's true, and it certainly appears to be true, how do we get this thing to open up and get all of our, because I think all of our stuff has to be in space that we own. I think that's what we have to get to. It's not good enough for me to just keep dumping stuff into Twitter space and then complain later that they, you know, or that they don't own it, because by dumping it in there, they do own it,
mm-hmm.
right? So we need to have this, it's this conundrum.
Well, are there two ways to do it, Dave? I mean, you know this far, far, far better than I do. On the one hand, you can get Twitter to open up so that it's more of a cloud and API, or you can make Twitter, in terms of the output, or you can make it open up in the input, and you can create something in the cloud that feeds Twitter the way Twitter feeds Facebook.
Yeah, I can do that for sure, okay? Now, the question is, how can we get the millions of people to do that?
Right.
That's the trick. The trick is to find the incentive for them. So that's why the fail whale is actually good. The more we see the fail whale, the easier it is to explain the incentive, right? I mean, you know, that's a good selling proposition. You want your stuff to be up, you're frustrated, but, you know, it's not, the fail whale isn't that big a problem yet, or, you know, maybe it will never be as big a problem as it once was. So where is the advantage, you know? And it's for a guy like Kutcher, using him as a test case, the advantage is very real. And
You know what might happen, Dave, is remember that event when the users of Dig revolted over that DMCA action where they were trying to, right?
Yeah.
And it was kind of a crisis in control because the users basically told the company, well, you're not going to be able to do this. You're not going to be able to keep us from copying this code, right? So maybe one way it could happen is if there's some crisis like that and people
But it hasn't
see,
happened. It hasn't happened. I think for
well,
a reason,
yeah.
Dig had the communication tools that allowed a crisis like that to happen. And Dig, you could foresee that it would happen because it is good at concentrating users, you know, where they can all communicate with each other, right? Twitter is not good at that. And I think that's why we haven't seen any of these crises. You know, why didn't the suggested user list do that? And look, think about it this way. If Dig had done something like that, do you think there would have been a meltdown? It's hard to know, but it seems like it would have. I think that the way Twitter is organized, the way it works, it tends to dissipate those things. They don't gain steam. They don't gain traction.
I don't know. It seems like it would be a pretty efficient system for organizing.
But things die out so quickly, Jay. I think that's the problem. I had a
suggestion
last week.
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe that's it.
I had a suggestion last week that maybe just a stupid suggestion, but I hate going in the middle of a discussion from an event with a hashtag and not being able to find out where are they.
Yeah,
so I made a suggestion. Why don't we have just have a new convention that's something like, you know, hashtag set, name of hashtag, right?
Yeah.
Just make it up, right? But the point is, and people said, good idea, good idea, good idea. But then what I saw was the half-life of an idea on Twitter is about 6 minutes.
It's worse
than
that, okay? It's worse, okay? Because, of course, I've had the same idea too, right? And probably everybody has.
Right.
Because we all have that moment of confusion where somebody uses a hashtag and you desperately want to know what it is.
What is it for?
You can't figure it out. Well, okay, so I'm a programmer, so I think a solution to that problem, right?
Right.
And so the solution is to have some new syntax in Twitter that says pound sign whatever equal sign string of characters, right? And then basically now that programs the platform so that so if 25 people agree that that's it, so in other words, 25 people do the same thing, then when somebody hovers over that hashtag, you get a nice little tooltip that tells you what it means. The solution from a technical standpoint is drop-dead simple, right? Now, if Twitter were really a programmable platform, we wouldn't have to wait for Twitter to do that, but it's not. And that's there, you see, it's not... They make the big deal about the API and everything, about how programmable it is, and it is very nice API, but it's very limited API and very deliberately limited API. Because if it were an open web-based system, right, meaning that, you know, the web doesn't have any of these throttles, no fire hose in the web, could not possibly have that fire hose. The only entity that could even conceivably have one would be like Network Solutions. Right, but they're prohibited from having anything like that by a billion different regulations. So I could create software that we could all install. You know, Brizzly could do it, or Seismic could do it, or whatever. But they're too scared. By the way, there's a urban myth floating around that basically these guys are all completely, completely controlled by Twitter. That they won't make a move if they feel that Twitter could possibly object to it. So it's not going to happen, Jeff. That kind of innovation is simply not going to come about until Twitter's ready to do it.
Right, but Dave, then to me the key is communication. Right, the irony is you'd think we could use the Twitter platform to communicate to Twitter users to set the standard.
Yeah,
and because of the half-life problem, we can't.
Well, then,
but that's what we have to solve here, whether it's this convention or other conventions. You're right. The bigger solution is the open Twitter. Okay, but even then, how do you subversively use whatever platform? Craigslist is not an open platform, but people use it for things that surprise Craig.
Right, and it's not heavily customized either.
No, not at all. So the question here is, the challenge that strikes me is kind of a media challenge, is how do you, just thinking about it right now, how do you bring people together to a point of critical mass by leapfrogging? It's the same thing Jay does more than I do in the morning, but for the day side, Bing, because you know you're hitting an entirely different bunch of people, and it's going to spread anew.
Right. Well, how did Barack Obama's community did it when they organized during the campaign to protest his own stances on national
security?
They used
his tools against him, right.
They used his tools, but they also used the political blogosphere to organize and then kind of go over to my...
That's a good point, Jay. You know what? The thing is, the blogosphere has the permanence, of course, which Twitter doesn't have.
Yeah, maybe
this
we
is the weakness of you
Twitter.
Blogging less.
Maybe there should be a... You know, you say there's political blogosphere, tech blogosphere, mommy bloggers, all these different... Maybe there should be Twitter bloggers.
Right.
Maybe
I think that could be all of us, but the problem is there's no... We have to have a reference point to go to. It is the old page web. It's the SEO web.
Right.
But you still say, here's something we can all link to and gather around.
But you know what? All those existing spheres of the blogosphere, the political blogosphere, the tech blogosphere, all those people now are on Twitter. I mean, increasingly that...
Right, but Jay, let me use you as a guinea pig for this idea. Is part of the problem I think you have is that you're spraying all kinds of ideas, that some of which I miss because they float by and I don't catch up or whatever.
Right.
And if you had your blog, I can go back to that and catch up. And an idea can develop there.
Right.
People can gather around that idea there. And you can use Twitter to do all – I sat down this morning with somebody from the White House, oddly, about Twitter strategy and the Open Government Initiative. And I had to sit down and extract for myself why tweet, right? And I, on my whiteboard in front of me in my office, I have a whole list of you promote, you cause discovery, you ask questions and cause collaboration, you answer questions and cause conversation, you create links and share things, you have news and events. You coalesce. These are all different reasons to use Twitter to feed something.
Mm-hmm.
If Twitter is the end in and of itself, I think we're screwed for a few reasons. One is Dave's point that it's a closed platform,
mm-hmm.
and the second is the thing we've just surfaced here, which is this idea of
yeah.
the half-life.
Yeah.
And so we're putting things into
right.
a dispersed cloud that disappears.
Well, that's why I invented my control room using FriendFeed as a place where discussion could happen of the things in my Twitter stream.
But where's FriendFeed gone?
But now FriendFeed has gone.
You've just gone from one platform to another. What you
yeah.
control is PressThink.
Right. Well, that is ultimately the answer, yeah.
Dave, what do you
or
think?
Or something evolved from both PressThink and Twitter.
It's the same thing. You've done this, Dave, because you've kept on blogging. Thank God you didn't quit. I knew you wouldn't. I knew you couldn't.
Of course I didn't. I did at 1.7.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm
glad
you
didn't.
Twitter. It had nothing to do with Twitter.
No, I know that, but I'm just but the fact that you can read a blog means that you have that maypole people
well,
can run around.
Well, you haven't stopped blogging either.
I've let up a lot because of Twitter. I've let up a lot, and I hate it, and I don't know what to do about it because of just this reason we're talking about here. I'll throw an idea out and I'll get the immediate adrenaline of seeing people react to it or spread it or whatever, and then it's smoke out of a cigarette. It's gone.
Interesting.
Right.
You know, Scoble is, if Scoble were here, he would be saying pretty much the same thing. And he wants, his big word is curation now. And he's sort of fumbling around with an idea that he's trying to grab onto. And we're all doing that. Somebody's going to figure this out. I think I'm starting a link blog again. That's one of the next things I'm doing. Because
mm-hmm.
when Scripting News started out, it was a link blog. And it was a link blog all the way through the beginning of 2007. And I stopped doing the link blog thing completely independently of Twitter. I had not started using Twitter yet.
Shouldn't Twitter just feed that? Shouldn't Twitter be a good tool just to feed that? And then that also takes it off of Twitter and puts it in a different realm?
Sure. I mean, you know, like I said earlier, I can get it. I can get myself to do it, okay? But that's not the problem.
Right.
Right. The problem is setting up a system where Jeff Jarvis does it. And I'm not trying, you know, I mean, in between the two of you, it seems that, Jeff, you have more of an impetus than Jay does. And I wouldn't ever press Jay because I respect what he does, and I'm not going to do it, you know. He's evolved off PressThink, I think enticing him back, although we did actually entice him back a little bit because he's got the top 40
yes.
page, right? And that has done a little bit of that organizing of his, and I have a record
with his crowd's curation added in.
Right. Well, with their
crowd
rating, with their ranking.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And I have kept an archive of everything that he's pushed through there over whatever period of time he's been using it.
Part of the reason I'm not doing as much on PressThink is that I've been building this new graduate program that I wanted to talk about.
Let's switch gears.
Yeah. And it relates to all of this because it's all symptomatic of this transformation. So we had a system in journalism school that was completely built on the old platforms. In fact, it was literally that way. We organized J School around platforms. We had print majors. We had broadcast majors. We had a magazine journalism program. And all of them were basically a boot camp model where you train people for a stable set of skills. You give them internships. You give them a little bit of media law, press ethics, and history. And then you send them out to stable jobs in a monopolistic industry. And J School basically ran that way for 40, 50 years, and it can't run this way anymore for a variety of reasons. So I'd started to try and think about how to get out of that model, and I finally realized that the only way to transcend the boot camp model of journalism school was to actually find a better metaphor and take the boot camp out and put a better one in. So the idea that I settled on was the notion of a studio education, and studio education is drawn more from the arts. If you get a master's degree in architecture or graphic design or painting, you take studio classes, and in studio classes, everybody is working on different projects. The instructor has projects, and the students have their own projects, and then they talk about their art, but then they gather for critique sessions, and everyone kind of helps evaluate their projects, and it's an introduction to the life of being an artist, because you have projects throughout your life. That's how you do your work as an artist. So I decided to take that idea over into J School, and the result was this new program at NYU that I call Studio 20, and it is focused entirely on innovation in journalism via the web, and instead of drawing people who are interested in print journalism or magazine journalism or broadcast or TV, the idea is to just draw talented entrepreneurial people who want to invent the future, bring a diverse group of people together who have different kinds of skills, and constitute them as a team and seek projects in web development and building the future of the news.
That's so incredible, Jay.
Yeah, so
that's really cool.
The basic proposition of this program is, come to NYU, work on really cool projects that reboot the news, and we'll give you a master's degree. And we'll do it not in a classroom way, but with real partners in the media world who need to progress and build a future for themselves. So after getting the program through all the hoops and approval levels that you need, both at the department level, the university level, the state level.
It ain't an open platform university.
Pardon me?
It's not an open platform, the university.
No, it isn't at all. it's like the Pentagon or something.
So you did all that? I did all that.
It's all approved. It's open for business, and we have the first group of students have arrived at NYU, and we're about 6 weeks into this program.
Well, did the students know that they were coming into this program when they did?
They did.
Well, they applied for it.
They applied for it. They have to apply to the Studio 20 program, and they have to self-select as people who are interested in innovation and rebooting the news.
Oh, what's fantastic about it is that you're, I don't know how to say this because it's kind of a surprise, but you're teaching journalism as almost the side issue to it. It's like you're going to learn journalism because in order to do these things, you have to do that. But what you're actually doing is creating news systems.
Right.
You're learning.
You're teaching the sustainability of journalism.
Sustainability. You're learning
preservation of the old journalism.
Right. Yeah. And you're learning how to do projects, and you're learning how to take what you have and bootstrap the rest. Right. And you're doing it not in an artificial environment of a classroom, but with partners out in the world who need this approach themselves.
What's great is that Jay and I are tackling the same thing from our own distinct perspectives, which we always do. I teach a course in entrepreneurial journalism. I'm in my third class now, where we have grant money, seed money, to give to the best students' ideas. But I think the same, we're doing a different solution, but I think we're seeing the same problems, that we were bad stewards of journalism. We weren't inventing and reinventing journalism. Our students didn't know anything about business, and thus left all the business and the survival of journalism to others.
Yeah.
And so one way or the other, we've got to show students have these muscles and exercise them. And
right. So this is what I wanted to ask you, Jeff, is what are you finding as you're now into the second year of this?
Third year.
When you introduce students to this whole puzzle, how do they react?
It's really interesting, and I got the opportunity to talk with Jay's class and brainstorm with them last week, and it's a great bunch, by the way, which is the best tribute to both Jay and the program. And the difference is that they're all collaborating on one project, whereas my students are working on individual projects. But in the end, we're teaching the same lessons, right, Jay?
Yeah.
And it's really interesting because what I'm doing is trying to corrupt them with capitalism, in essence. Not because they need to do it, but because they need to know it. They need to know where they sit in the ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
And I had, for me, what was rather dispiriting discussion with the class this last Wednesday after I had spoken with yours, Jay, in which I talked about the Columbia Reconstruction of Journalism Report and their final, what I said was desperate proposal to go for government support.
Mm-hmm.
And my students are all kind of saying, okay, you know, easy solution. And I'm saying, no, there are no easy solutions. That's why you're in this class. You've got to figure out the business and the ecosystem and where you fit in it. And there may be a role. There's plenty of roles for not-for-profit and tons of roles for volunteerism and all this other stuff. But you've got to understand the whole ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm seeing is that there is kind of a journalistic, reflexive resistance to understanding economy. Forget business. Understanding the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And the economy of journalism.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we've got to teach. And then they'll find their role in it. They'll find their place in it. But that's the hardest lesson I've found is they all come in and they say, oh, it's no problem. I'll do a not-for-profit. I don't have to worry about all that.
Right, as if that's some sort of solution. Right.
Well, because it's what you just described a few minutes ago. It's what they could do in the old days. They could go work for a monopoly and they didn't have to worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why... You know, the legacy players are in the state they're in is because they thought they didn't have to worry about it. They were monopolies, they were lazy, and they weren't reinventing things, they weren't rethinking things. So the rethinking, I guess what I'm saying is they tend, even though they're young, most of them, my students are older than yours, because I'm at a public university, but they tend to go to the reflex of the industry. It's already in them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always
yeah.
struggling with how to beat it out of them. So even with your students the other day, they were kind of listening to your partner as if your partner were the boss, and my only message to them was, no. If they could just do the obvious thing, they could hire expensive consultants, they would have done it. You're
right.
Here to tell them the thing they haven't thought of.
Exactly. And we're trying to attract people to Studio 20 who basically haven't been in the pool of J-School students before because they are the kind of people who realize they can create it themselves. That there's a real dividing line between those who kind of trying to fit yourself into an existing system in the belief that that system will always exist, and those like Cody Brown, for example, who's an undergrad, who automatically assume, well, we just have to build something new. I mean, we just have to create something ourselves. They're not going to do it for us. And one of the things I found is that is I have to introduce Studio 20 students to the entire puzzle of journalism today, and that's what we're spending most of the semester doing is I got to get them up to speed very quickly on the entire puzzle of media, journalism, technology, business, and sustainability today, because without that, they can't go anywhere. But on the other hand, once they're starting to get that this is their path, they're starting to get energized by it. So I'm very optimistic that we will.
One of the things you've done, Jay, that's brilliant about this, you just said a minute ago, which I haven't done, we're going to try to figure out ways to do it too, is to attract the people who want to know this, who want to figure this out.
It's got to be self-selection. That's the only way
there's
to do
so
it.
There are so few of them, though. That's
there
is
are a few of them. But I only need 15 a year.
You guys are probably the only two that are doing this.
I
put that out as a challenging statement.
There are other programs that are tending in this direction, but I only need 15 a year, and part of the reason I'm talking about it here is now is the time to contact me if you want to study at Studio 20, and also if you're interested in the CUNY program because we're recruiting new people.
Yeah.
Right.
Probably the
right.
people who listen to this podcast are probably...
Or exactly who we want, exactly.
That's
why I'm
doing this
podcast.
You have Dan Gilmore teaching entrepreneurship in Arizona. You have David Westfall just started a class in USC.
There's one at Stanford.
There's one at Stanford. Berkeley's been doing some of this stuff. Syracuse has Larry Kramer. So this the start of it, what I hope to do is to bring all of us who are trying to teach this together, not that we teach it the same way, but it's so new an idea in a journalism school that we've got to bring people together and try to figure out how we encourage it, and not just with our students. Part of what I'm trying to do at CUNY is to start incubators to help outside companies who want to develop new stuff in this way and see and ask, how can I help them?
That's a very important thing. I would love to get together with all the people who are trying to do the same thing.
Well, they're telling us we're out of time.
damn, it's been fun. I'm really
glad
you
had
me.
Well, we could go on if you want.
I've got to go talk to somebody.
Oh, that's
I think
right.
we should wind it up. But Jeff, thanks so much for joining
Jeff,
us, Babe.
So
it's been a pleasure as always.
Right on. Okay, that's it for Rebooting News this week. See you all next week. Bye.